mass shootings kickstart a gun regulation debate, more scandals surrounding the Indiana Department of Veterans Affairs, plus more alcohol expansion at the state fair, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 9th, 2019.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Built on a 100-plus-year foundation of legal service, Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients stay ahead of a changing world. Working to develop an understanding of each client's needs to help build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, mass shootings in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio, have renewed debates at the federal level over more stringent gun regulations, with both of Indiana's U.S. senators balking at support for universal background checks for all gun sales. Federal background checks for gun purchases don't apply to many sales, including online, and legislation approved by the U.S. House would greatly expand the number of sales required to go through background checks. Republican Senator Todd Young, though, won't say whether he'd support that expansion.
We are, of course, dealing with a constitutional right here in the Second Amendment, recognizing that every single right has its limitations.
Many gun regulation advocates want Congress to revive a federal ban on assault weapons. Republican Senator Mike Braun hinted he's open to that possibility.
We got to do common sense things so that those of us that believe in the Second Amendment don't have harsher restrictions that get put in place.
A recent study says mass shooting fatalities were 70% less likely to occur during the 10 years when a federal assault weapons ban was in place more than a decade ago. But Todd Young says he doesn't think the data shows renewing the ban would be effective. Both Young and Braun have received campaign contributions from the National Rifle Association, which opposes such measures. Will there be any movement in Congress on gun regulations? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, is there enough momentum this time for action?
I think there's enough momentum for some action. I mean, even though we know that Mitch McConnell is a lobbyist for the NRA, even though that, I think that you're going to see some movement on background checks and red flag laws. And both of those are good. Don't get me wrong. I think they both need to be done. It isn't enough. It isn't enough. When you see what the assault weapons ban that President Clinton signed into law in 94 did for this, and the number, percentage, 70% fewer mass shootings when that was in effect than now, we've had 251 this year. I mean, what is wrong with this country? And it isn't only the background checks, and it isn't only the red flag laws. We need a ban on military-grade weapons and high-capacity magazines, period. And the public wants that. The public wants that. And woe to the Congress if they don't deliver.
And yet, I mean, I imagine we've asked this question after Sandy Hook, we asked this question after Parkland, we asked this question again now. So, is this the time that makes the difference?
The formula is not. We're following the same political formula we normally follow, right? Because the people who are the victims of these crimes are oftentimes, or most every time, not political activists. They're not at a rally taking, you know, for whatever reason. They're at Walmart shopping,
right,
for back-to-school supplies. And then those normal Americans who normally do not engage in the politics or the policy of gun regulation say, why aren't we doing something like what the president and Senator Mitch McConnell have suggested in the last several days, which are background checks and red flag laws and a couple other what they view as common sense items. And the reason is because the strongest gun Second Amendment rights activists believe that is just a window dressing for taking away your guns, right? And
do they believe it or do they just say
it? I think they believe it. And I think there's a lot of people in the middle who don't think that that's true. I think they do believe that there is a way to, and I believe that too. But what has happened, especially in the context of right in the middle of this Democrat presidential debate period, and so you've got common sense in one bucket, and then you've got the crowd that believes it's just all just a front to take away guns. Then you have the Democrat presidents for
candidates for president
coming in from the left saying, yeah, we need a federal gun buyback program with all these classes of guns, and a lot of other things. Federal licenses. Cory Booker yesterday said we need a federal license. Everyone's got to be interviewed. No one can have a gun until you get through, follow these steps. So there is cause. I don't think that's ultimately right for most Americans. And I think if the president can lead on this the way he has the last couple of days, and Mitch McConnell now is coming back, who has never been a supporter of background checks and some of these common sense things, the president could force a lot of this as long as we can just keep it to that.
If there is something, is the red flag laws seemingly the most likely of the bunch?
It seems to be. That's where a lot of lawmakers and politicians are from the Republican Party especially are pointing at those types of measures. I think they're in 17 states.
Including
Indiana's right now. And they have said this is a way that we can maybe start to nibble at this problem. Even the White House has suggested, of course, that the red flag laws might be a place to start. The challenge for gun control advocates is that, I don't want to say it's attention span, but they have busy lives. These things peak in terms of public interest, and I don't say they fade, but other things move into the.
Right.
Whereas if you have an organization as powerful as the NRA, a seismograph on where they are, they're up here, but they're always up here.
Yeah.
And when you have single issue advocates or activists, it's hard to blunt that. And we saw that on Friday when the president talked about, he gave his hint that there might be something he's willing to do. He says, we need to do something. Oh, and I've talked to Wayne. Wayne LaPierre, the president. But I mean, the idea that every statement has to start with my first name, buddy, the head of NRA.
I want to kind of get to that idea, which is, does this time feel any different than all of the other times?
Feels the same to me. I mean, I remember us talking about the red flag law right after Parkland, too. And I think maybe a few other states have added on to it. I just think we need to figure out a way that, it's all about extremes. There's got to be a middle ground between no one can have any guns and there should be no rules at all for guns. I mean,
We had that, though. We had that when we had the assault weapons ban. The other guns were not confiscated, and the results were completely different. And in this particular case, the mother called the police and said, I'm concerned about my son in El Paso. I'm concerned about that.
Which is why I think the red flag law
makes the most sense. And the police said they couldn't do anything.
I think most Americans are ready for some kind of background check legislation. They clearly are, right? And I went to my kids' intermediate school orientation last night, and they said, now make sure if you volunteer, it takes 10 days for your background check to clear. We're not going to let you in the school unless your background check. It takes me 10 days from the time I want to go to the Children's Museum with my kids to actually be able to go and clear a background check. So I don't think, culturally, this is that big of a thing for us to get over.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will Congress pass meaningful gun regulations by the end of 2019? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, how did his service in the Trump administration affect Dan Coats' legacy? This is an interesting one. 28% say it improved it, 35% say it damaged it, and 37% say it didn't have any effect. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, on the same theme, Governor Eric Holcomb urged people to see something to say something in the wake of those mass shootings, but he dodged questions about the role President Donald Trump's rhetoric may have played.
Governor Holcomb says it will take partnerships between local, state, and federal law enforcement to help prevent mass shootings, and he urged Hoosiers to be vigilant and report to authorities if they're concerned about someone's behavior. The El Paso shooting suspect's racist screed, posted online before the shooting, used language similar to that regularly espoused by President Trump, but Holcomb sidestepped questions about whether Trump is part of the problem. The governor did tout Indiana's red flag law, where police can take a person's guns if they appear to pose a threat to themselves or others. Meanwhile, a state lawmaker this week railed against background checks for gun purchases. Seymour Republican Jim Lucas has long advocated for abolishing Indiana's entire gun licensing system.
So, Mike O'Brien, we just talked about the federal level. At the state level, obviously, our legislative session is a few months away, which makes a difference here, but will there be movement in either direction this coming session on Indiana's gun laws?
We haven't seen any movement in recent years, but we have seen a lot of discussion. And Representative Lucas wants what he
He wants no license.
To constitutional carry, right? Yeah. It's a constitutional right. You shouldn't have to go to the government and get a license to do it. But on the other end, you've had parents in Noblesville who, in the wake of that shooting, wanted to see more accountability for kids that take their parents' guns and make sure that their parents are, being responsible gun owners, which I think is good. So I think there's been this kind of there has been a hesitation by Republicans in the legislature. Now, they've done a lot to expand gun rights and gun possession and other things in recent years.
And so this, you can take
the last
guns.
Couple of years, they've been very reluctant to do anything. I think the other theme that you hit on here was, and it's not just limited to gun control, it's going to be a lot. There's this appeal for Republicans to have to answer to everything that Donald Trump says. And Woody Myers this week called all Republicans cowards, right? Your Democrat candidate for governor. I don't think it's reasonable to go to every Republican elected official and go, hey, what do you think about the thing that Trump tweeted this morning? They're running their own campaigns. They've got their own agenda. We're not going to get clear of it. It's as a campaign tactic. I get it. But I think there's going to be a lot of Democrats want Republicans to do their work for them.
Let's stay on that theme for a second.
Yeah.
It isn't reasonable to have them answer for every single thing that Donald Trump says and does at any time.
This isn't every single thing. I mean, he is inciting the hatred. He is inciting the violence. And they are cowards for not standing up to it. The only reason that Eric Holcomb is in the governor's residence is because of Donald Trump, plain and simple, okay? And yet now he doesn't want to have anything to do with him, or he doesn't want to own him. He doesn't want to talk about the fact that this president is inciting white supremacists and limiting what the FBI can do to investigate them. He is telling people that they're good people. And when people in his audiences yell, we can stop the invasion by shooting them, he smirks, okay? That is not the conduct that's suitable to the President of the United States. And anybody with backbone, be they Democrat or Republican, ought to stand up and say so. And if they're not willing to do that, then they are cowards.
I want to ask about the original question, which is, will we see anything happen at the state level? Mike's right. There have been far more broad proposals on either side offered in the last few sessions, and what they have done is relatively small when they have done anything. Do you think that changes?
I don't think so. I think House Speaker Brian Bosma has especially sort of recognized the optics of loosening gun rules and regulations when we're kind of in this epidemic of gun violence, and I think he's trying to hold back that portion of his caucus, and so far he's done that pretty well. So
there was a bill moving during Parkland that they stopped.
Right, at the end of that session.
But they haven't done anything either.
They did change some licensing issues and took away some of the fees.
But
they haven't done anything to control the epidemic of gun violence.
At some point, Brian Bosma is no longer going to be the Speaker of the House. Whenever that is, we don't quite know yet. But when someone with that kind of political heft isn't the leader of that caucus, do the floodgates open a little more?
I think that's when people come to appreciate just how savvy and how strong a leader and cat herder Brian Bosma was during his tenure as Speaker. Because it's one thing to deal with issues controversies once they already bubble to the surface and they become fodder for public discussion. Hey, the bill that's moving through the House and it's gotten a committee hearing. It's harder to deal with it at that point than to sort
put
of
the kibosh on it.
Put it on there. And that's where I think, I haven't sat in any caucus committees, but I think there's my sense is that he has done a good job of practicing a certain sort of preventive medicine here that keeps some of those measures from ever seeing the light of day.
Yeah. Well, a former state lawmaker could face felony charges over his failure to register as a lobbyist on behalf of the Indiana Department of Veterans Affairs.
The Indianapolis Star uncovered that former Senator Alan Paul had a secretive deal with the State Department of Veterans Affairs that's paid him more than $150,000 to advocate for the agency's agenda at the State House. The Republican first began that work during a one-year window in which ex-lawmakers are barred from lobbying their former colleagues. The Indiana Lobby Registration Commission sanctioned IDVA and ordered Paul to register as a lobbyist, but he never did, and now the Marion County Prosecutor's Office could take action.
Thank you, Kelly. The Department of Veterans Affairs is trying to climb out of this scandal hole it's created for itself. Does this set it back?
Well, I mean, to be fair, I mean, the agency caused the problem in the beginning, but they did respond correctly when told to go ahead and file as having a lobbyist. They went ahead and filed. It's Alan Paul who has refused to file now. And but obviously there are some serious, I mean, this seems like a pretty egregious case of not only breaking the cooling off period, but also not reporting.
Yeah, we don't see this very often.
We don't. But, I mean, to me, when I read all the work that the Star has done on this, the Indianapolis Star, I mean, to me, there's only one reason to do this contract through this temporary agency, and that's to hide something.
Does this set IDVA back?
I think it may. There are those who say that any attempt to ferret out any wrongdoing is somehow a slap in the face at veterans, and I think most people would say that's a non-starter. I mean, just because you served our nation doesn't mean you get a get-out-of-jail-free card for the rest of your life. Bad things deserve scrutiny and punishment if, in fact, warranted. So I think it's the fact that it was handled through an employment agency raises some red flags. The fact that you have seemingly a lawmaker, former lawmaker, dug in, just saying simply, you know, thumbing my nose. And I will say that those who think that it's great that there is a lobby registration commission, but when you look at the late fines, for instance, that had been imposed on both the agency and on the temporary agency, which had, I think, been upwards of $100,000, those were reduced or negotiated down or offered, a settlement offered to $3,000 or $4,000. And so that suggests that you know, asking for forgiveness, as the saying goes, is a lot easier than asking for permission. Because what's the worst that's going to happen? I'll make $100,000 on the front end and pay a fine of $1,000 on the back.
Governor Eric Holcomb was out at the state fair on Monday, ceremonially signing a bill that passed last session about exempting military pensions from the income tax. And part of the bill was about recruiting veterans, not just those who are already here in Indiana, but recruiting veterans who are leaving the service to come to Indiana and live and work. How much does that sort of recruitment tool get hindered by, well, if you search Indiana Department of Veterans Affairs, you're not going to find a lot of great things written about them?
Well, look, I think we're several years now into recognizing there were problems at that agency, putting some recommendations in place that were never put in place, and then additional problems happening, right? But now I think with the new director, with Dennis Weimer there, he's coordinated a lot of these agencies, he's gone out and met with every veterans group, and he's really gone overboard, I think, to try to internally put systems in place and accountability measures in place to make sure this kind of stuff isn't happening again in the future. But on the lobby registration side, I'm a registered lobbyist, and it's like no joke. It's like we have a guy who does it like with, it takes a lot of time to do that, and it should. I mean, it promotes transparency. People ought to know who's paying people that are influencing lawmakers, and that's a big, you know, and that's a big part of this. So I think it was appropriate that he probably should have registered. I don't know what he did. I don't think anybody really knows that whether he engaged the legislature or not. Maybe he believes he didn't to the threshold. But it's important that those who should register do.
Weimer's been on the job for about 6 months now. I just talked to him on Monday about this idea of trying to get away from these scandals, and he talked about he's hired a lot of new people, including a new general counsel. Are we at the tail end of the problems and hopefully coming out of it?
I thought we were before. So, you know, who knows? I mean, this has a very bad odor about it. It really does. And it's part of the expression that Eric Holcomb used to use before he was governor was the culture of corruption. I mean, the idea that you would break the cooling off period, okay, and then get paid after the cooling off period expires shows that it was an intent to deceive.
And also, I think, as you pointed out, Nikki, the fact that they didn't just do it to him directly.
Right. They did it through an agency, so his contract wasn't listed.
It is
weird. You don't do that kind of thing
if
you're not trying to hide something, which is part of the culture of corruption. I hope it's cleared up, especially since we're encouraging veterans to come here, but who knows?
Well, the Indiana State Fair has added a second alcohol venue, a wine garden that will feature local Hoosier wineries, in yet another expansion of the fair's alcohol policies since it became legal there 5 years ago.
The legislature left alcohol policy in the hands of the Indiana State Fair Commission when it lifted the ban in 2014, and the commission made a pledge. Alcohol would be restricted to one closed-off area, an exhibition hall that was only open to those 21 and older. But then alcohol was expanded to concerts at the Coliseum,
then the free stage. Then those under 21 were allowed into the alcohol exhibition, and now there's a second alcohol venue added. A new state law this year also lets patrons buy alcohol to carry out, though they can't drink it on the grounds.
John Schwannis, when the legislature just said, it's legal, do whatever the hell you want, was this kind of expansion then inevitable?
Is that what it said? Do whatever the hell you want.
I mean, I actually looked at the bill, and it literally just deleted some lines from code. It didn't add anything.
I think it is inevitable, but that's no knock necessarily on the commission as much as it is a recognition of reality and pragmatism in the 21st century. Look at what's happened, for instance, at our universities. Purdue now for several years has started by offering alcohol at football games, and then it expanded to basketball, men's and then women's, and I think it's multiple sports. IU is going to get into the game of football starting this fall, and I'm guessing it will before long expand. And that's been the case with Big Ten schools and schools. And I don't think it's as if there's some secret cabal trying to, let's figure out how we can get alcohol into the hands of fans. It's programs that are pressed for money trying to figure out how they can get dollars. And in the case, for instance, of football, I think Purdue made $1 million in 2018 off of football. So, I mean, it's a reality, I think.
I talked to State Senator Jim Merritt about this, who wrote the bill in 2014. And he pointed out that since it became legal, there hasn't been a single citation from the excise police at the state fair during the state fair. Does that lend credence to the... Listen, yes, they're expanding, but they know what they're doing.
Well, sure, I think that definitely helps. Now, I sat in those hearings 5 years ago, and the fair said repeatedly, we will not let any children, you know, in these venues. And I've also sat in those venues. There's nothing in there for kids to do. It's literally just people drinking beer and wine. And so I'm not exactly sure why the kids need to be in there. Seems like we have a problem with having, like, adult-only spaces nowadays.
Should
spoken like a woman without little children.
She's all grown now.
Yeah, well, that's why you know.
Is this expansion going to stop at any point? Is that a fair question to ask?
I don't envision any stopping, and really I don't. As long as they're policing it correctly, I don't see any problem with it. You know, nor do I see any problem with the venues. I remember going down to the University of Louisville for a basketball game. Years and years and years ago, and we weren't just talking beer and wine. We were talking bourbon and scotch and whiskey.
It is Kentucky.
I know. But, I mean, they were making money off it, and as long as we keep shortchanging our higher education institutions with tax dollars, it's going to happen.
And prevent some of the pre-gaming or the binge drinking that perhaps goes on beforehand.
How did you get state fair...
I happen to know how much of a percentage the higher education budget presents in those.
Let me ask this. During those conversations in the legislature when they legalized alcohol at the state fair, one thing that we heard a lot of complaints about was the idea of we don't want a Budweiser stand next to the lemon shakeups. Are we getting closer and closer to that, though? Well,
Budweiser's the king of beers, and it's America's beers, first and foremost. But... I don't think this is an environment where it's encouraging excessive drinking. I think it's promoting a lot of Indiana.
That's
spirits,
true. The way
spirits,
they
products,
have
winery products.
So far.
We
true.
Obviously have a pretty dynamic craft alcohol, just generally beer, wine, and
so we
liquor.
Could have Sun King or Upland or something like that.
That's
there.
Why I use,
but
not Upland.
Budweiser.
Not Budweiser.
Not
so
Budweiser.
Are we closer? Budweiser. Do we want to open it up that
like
much? Do we
want
to open it up?
I want my Bud Light, but other than that, I'm good.
But do we want even if it's Indiana breweries and wineries? Do we want them literally everywhere at the fair?
Again,
as long as they're not selling underage.
I don't think this place is a culture where you're going to go drink 10 craft beers. I mean, and get hammered. I think you're going and just enjoying your day at the fair, and if you want to have a glass of wine,
unless the price is dropped.
You don't want all these.
Yeah, all right, well, finally, Gen Con, North America's largest tabletop gaming convention, set new records in Indianapolis this week with around 70,000 attendees. Mike O'Brien, if you had to choose a tabletop board game to sum up the political landscape in the country right now, what would you pick?
Not about tabletop board games, but if you watch the Democratic presidential debates, Final Fantasy seems like the best video game.
See?
That's a good one.
Wow, I'd pick Risk.
Risk.
We've got that guy in the White House.
Sorry, I just play old school games. Life or Sorry, maybe.
Shoots and ladders.
Sorry.
I love Sorry.
I'm with you. I like Sorry a lot. Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it, or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, built on a 100-plus year foundation of legal service. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients stay ahead of a changing world, working to develop an understanding of each client's needs to help build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.